General Burks, Reel 8.
You were saying just then about the... we were talking about firing on the move. Was there a discussion about this during this period of the exercises?
There's a tremendous division of feeling. If you could hit a thing on the move, you could hit it stationary. Each tank battalion and its permanent location had a thing called a riper, which was an indoor range with tanks on the move and simulated the gun, the action of the tank from the point of view of gunnery.
Yeah.
And so there was a good deal of it practiced, but the tragedy was that there was not enough firing with live ammunition. And if the first gunner got 5 rounds in every other year, that was about the limit.
It was
very much the same situation with the gunners. But that's what we paid bitterly for in the early days of the war.
Yes, I see.
Because they just weren't accustomed to using live ammunition.
Yes, yes. I mean, this is something that
quite new.
You experienced directly in action in the Second World War, did you?
Very much.
Yes, I see. Was this finance at the time? Was it in the
finance?
Yes, there's
finance was the end all and be all of the army at this period.
Yes, and you would encounter that, of course, as this staff officer in those summer exercises.
I encountered it when I got to the War Office with a crack.
Yes, yeah. I'll come to that in a moment. I'd like to ask you briefly about the mobile force exercise that took place in the September. This is, I think, the Jock Stewart one that you had mentioned. You'd done your 1934 exercises, then there was this secondary exercise, this mobile force one. Did you feel when you were involved in that it was a setup for, well, discrediting tanks?
Well, I think there's not the slightest doubt that the thing was to discredit the tanks.
Yeah.
And everything was organised that end. Hobo nearly mucked it up by getting round it. He got there too early with the tank brigade. And then they said it's an unfordable obstacle in front of him and he'd wait 24 hours to get over it. That sort of business. The thing was quite ridiculous.
Yes. And this did leave a very bitter feeling, did it, within the...
Well, it did. But it had a repercussion because after a bit people realised, I'm talking about 6 weeks afterwards, that the whole thing was just false.
I see.
Because if you do exaggerate anything like it, it does come back on you, doesn't it?
Yes. Did you have direct experience of sort of obstruction in any way?
Oh, yes. Well, I was doing staff captain to the Hobo Force. I don't know what it was called. George Lindsay was commanding it.
Yes.
And you had columns of lorries, for instance. You got them... was one particular case, I forget the name of the village now, just about the plain there. I got the supply lorries there, all there, the whole lot of them, about 40, and I was told that the road was impossible, and they were all held up. They were held up for 12 hours, that sort of business.
Yes.
Which was...
The umpire told you that, did
he? The umpires, yes. It was all silly talk. But
yeah. And these were shaped against... giving you any sort of leeway. Yeah.
Well, yes, it was false, because if he hadn't have done something like that, the exercise had been over about 24 hours too soon.
Yes, I see. Yes. Fine. In October 34, you were posted to the War Office as General Staff 2 to Hobart himself, who was then Inspector of the Tank Corps, is that correct?
That's right.
Yes. What were your main duties, in fact, in the War Office here?
That is an awkward question.
Yes.
They had, at the War Office in that time, they had a second-grade staff officer, very much in demand, these jobs, because they were spot jobs. And they had a second-grade staff officer for each branch of the service. Because each branch of the service had an inspector, who was a brigadier, and he lived in the War Office. And your appointment was to military training. And so your boss was the director of military training, At the same time, you're also staff officer to the inspector.
I see.
So you had your sort of your infantry, cavalry, gunner, tank side of it, and you had your general side to the war office as a whole.
Yes.
And all matters affecting your own branch of service came through you.
Yes.
They had two G1s to coordinate, but they never came into sort of detailed questions at all.
No. Did you all these general staff officers of the different arms worked in the same area, did you, in the same...
They worked in the same room. They had an enormous room on the second or principal floor of the War Office, which was, of course, promptly dubbed Whipsnade. And they had a staff officer from infantry and a cavalry, artillery, engineers, RAAC and tanks, the six.
Yes. Now, in fact, you were working mainly for Hobart there, I mean, in terms of...
Mainly for him, yes.
Yes. And what were you actually doing? What was the sort of day-to-day routine? What sort of work was it?
Well, it varied tremendously from getting more tanks in, new type of tank, the lease of Lulworth. The whole thing is just everything to do with tanks came through that.
Yes.
And you also had to deal with the officers too. They came through your tank officers.
Yeah. Perhaps if we talk first then about getting new tanks, what were you, or what was Hobart as well, stressing at that moment? What were you aiming for?
Well, they had the experimental wing, I forget what they call it now, at Woolwich.
Yes.
Were making a tank according to general staff specification. But when you make a machine like that, you have a thing called a general staff specification. And that lays down the broad outline, the width of the armour, the weight of the calibre of the gun,
yeah,
the weight of the track, the weight of the tank, and the size of the machine, and so on and so forth. Well, they had an experimental place at Woolwich, which were doing a mock-up in wood, as a matter of fact, that sort of business. Then Vickers were doing it. They had under the direction of Carden.
Yeah.
Sir John Carden, who was very good.
So you were indirectly involved in this sort of work, were you?
Yes, we used to go down there about whenever they wanted an opinion or a deviation from the general staff specification. You used to go down there and have conferences.
Yeah. Was this a replacement to the medium tank, was it?
Or yes, it was, because we hadn't got a tank. We hadn't got a war tank at all.
Yes.
And then, being a thoroughly muddled business, there was another tank design under the Master General of the Ordnance, who was Hugh Ellis,
yes,
which was the I tank.
Yes.
And if the thing was not coordinated properly...
So, yes, you've got two branches within the War Office then doing the same job.
Yes, and then with different opinions.
Yes, and you were in the middle of this going on, were you? You were aware of this conflict?
I've been ground to pieces with overwork.
Yes. You favoured this Woolwich design, did you?
My personal feeling is the same as it is now, that you can't get a universal tank.
Yes.
Requirements and their characteristics are different. They've got at last they've got two now. They've got the Scorpion, you see, and the big tank,
yes,
the Chieftain. Whereas in those days they were trying to get a universal tank for cheapness, money again.
Yes.
And of course they turned out the Matilda, the I tank, and the Vickers.
Yes. At this time, what was your relationship with Vickers then? Were you in any way getting involved with their designs or giving
with Vickers,
them?
We used to go and see it about. Herbert used to go down with me about every 2 or 3 months if they had some change in it or some change in design or something like that. They wanted to show you how it was going.
Well, what were they working on at that time?
They were working on the Vickers tank.
I see.
What? Which was the one we went to war with, really.
I see, yes.
That was at Walton.
Yes.
You see, they had an experimental tank that was also built there called a 16-tonner.
Yeah.
You've probably seen pictures of it.
Yes, I have. I think they only made one of them, didn't they?
Three,
yes.
Went very well too, but it's a very expensive tank, and a big tank, and when they found what the expense was going to be, they said no.
Yeah. This tank that Vickers were working on, was that the cruiser type?
Yes, the one we went to war with.
Yes, yeah. Now, what was the sort of relationship between Vickers and Woolwich? That's what I find a bit confusing. Who?
As far as I remember, hostile.
Yes, I see. It seems as if there's a whole... I can imagine sort of whole sets of drawings going backwards and forwards. And
no, they never got as far as that. The clerk at Woolwich would never allow anything out of Woolwich.
Oh, I see, yes. Yeah. In other words, these are two self-contained exercises going on, were there? With you, yes, going to both places.
I found Carden much easier to get on with. And Carden used to come down to the plane on when he had exercises.
Oh, I see. Now, Carden, yes, Carden was Vickers.
Sir John Carden, yes.
Yes. Now, which exercise was that he came? He came down to a few, did he?
He came down two or three.
Yes.
He was a proper tank chap.
Yeah. And you actually discussed what you thought were the things that were needed, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. What were
the... Herr Hobo saying what we ought to do.
Yeah. What was he sort of aiming at? He was also wanting this sort of universal tank, was he? Or was he in favour of a medium?
No, Carden was working then on a light medium tank.
Yeah.
He was rather for a faster tank.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is, what were you and Hobart actually asking Carden to do? What sort of tank were you saying to him we want?
I think the best way to describe it is an upgraded light tank, a medium tank. We wanted more armour on.
Yes.
And a bigger gun. We wanted a smaller tank.
Yeah.
And impossible, of course.
Yes, I see. And so the armour side of that was met with the infantry.
But actually, we were right, because we met it... They finished the war more or less with what the tank Hobo wanted.
Yeah. Which was... Which
the
one?
The nearest approach then was the Sherman.
Yes, I see. Yeah. You were... Also at the time then, if we leave design for a moment, you're dealing with personnel. People, at this time during the War Office, was this period of somewhat confused period of mechanisation of the cavalry going on.
Yes.
Were you involved in that?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Because when I was also incidentally, the War Office job, you were staff officer to the Colonel Commandant, who was Ernest Swinton.
Oh, I see, yes.
And that's where the personnel came in, because, you see, he interviewed all officers for regular commission in the tank regiment.
Oh, he saw them himself, did he?
Yes, he saw them. You had to arrange it.
I see. Did you actually do any of the pre-selection? Or, I mean, when they applied, did you do any...
Oh, yes, you saw them all and checked up their name and number and where they were educated and so on and so forth, so that you could brief Swinton when he saw them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Theoretically, of course, it should have been. It was all done by MS, but
what's MS?
Military secretary. But
I see. Yes.
The man who did it in the half case, and same with the gunners, and the same with the cavalry.
Yeah.
Inspector General used to see them.
I see. Yes. And what were you looking for? People with mechanical backgrounds, or?
Yes. People really who are interested in tanks.
I see, simple, yes, a straightforward interest in mechanisation.
Because it already came, Sandhurst had a lot to do with it afterwards. Because that's where they were trained before they were commissioned.
Yeah.
But before they were accepted for the tank branch, Sandhurst, the inspector used to see them.
I see, yes.
It was rather frowned on, especially irregular, but in practice that's what happened.
Yes, I see. In other words, people at Sandhurst, with a preference for going into tanks,
yes,
saw you and
saw Swinton.
Yes, I see. During that period, when this mechanisation thing, was there? I mean, how was this confusion in your case in practical terms? Were you told one set of instructions about how many regiments were to be mechanised, and then was this altered at all, or was there?
It came to the DMT, the Director of Military Training, that.
Yes. That was Brooke, was it, at the time?
That was McNamara, and he was relieved by Brooke.
Yes. And you had to be responsible then for...
Briefing the director.
Yes, but the cavalry men who were coming over to be trained, then you had to be responsible, did you, for their going down to Bovington and things, did you?
That was so, yes.
Yes.
Because Bovington, when I went there, she was entirely a tank business, or a Royal Tank Regiment business.
Yeah.
A Royal Tank Corps. But while I was at the War Office, it was turned into an army school.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask. What was your view of this thing that was developing? In other words...
Well, I engineered it. I made myself frankly unpopular with the regiment because it was their depot and their home and everything.
They considered you were opening it up to all sorts of people?
I was a dirty dog.
I see, yes.
But it was the obvious thing to do. I mean, with the war coming on, that you couldn't possibly have two tank schools in the country, could you?
Yes, I see.
Two army tank schools.
Yeah. You, in other words, were very much involved with this shift,
with
which fusion, which became the Royal Army Corps. Yes. Did you feel, you mentioned there, that the war coming on, did you have that feeling when you were...
Oh, yes, it was obvious.
Yeah.
I think anyone who's got sense or did, the people who tried to squash it were the civilian side.
Yeah.
They said the economy of the country and so on and so forth.
Did you meet any political interference on that score? I mean, did you have any... it wouldn't have gone down, would it, to your level of, political direction about how fast the mechanisation thing should proceed?
Well, it was agreed that it should be mechanised, and the two cavalry regiments should go first, the 11th and 12th Lancers, and then the others... They had them earmarked down, I'm talking from memory now, they had them down about two a year for full mechanisation.
Yeah. So you made yourself unpopular with this influx of cavalry men. You were in favour, in other words, of this widening of the Royal Tank Corps to...
Yes, personally I hated it, but it was the obvious thing to do. There was no other solution.
Yes, yeah.
Quite apart from the sort of traditional side, there was the practical side.
Yeah.
Machinery and schools and equipment and officers, training, and above all, the instructors.
Yeah. Was Ellis at all involved in this? I know he was MGO. Did he take an interest as a former commander of the Tank Corps? Did he take any active interest
who?
In this? Ellis, Hugh Ellis.
Hugh Ellis was the... MGO then, he was Master General of the Ordnance. He was a tired man, he was naturally lazy, and he kept very much on the sidelines.
I see, yeah.
He had his pets, Matilda, this eye tank which he was building. And apart from that, he didn't really, my opinion was he rather obstructed the thing.
Yes. Did Hobart and Ellis sort of clash over this design thing? Was there a...
Of course, he clashed with everybody, Hobo did, but... they respected each other. They had their differences.
Yes. Did you find him difficult to work with under these conditions? There must have been a lot of...
Hobo, I got to... Like, he was a dear, but he was terribly difficult to start with. The first 3 months was quite impossible. In fact, I went to him just Christmas 34 and said that to save my face, could he give me another job? And he said, well, I'm going on leave next week to Switzerland for 3 weeks. What the hell do you think you're going to do? And so after that, we got on terribly well.
Yes.
And I respect him very much. He was... When you meet a man with a first-class brain and the energy to push it along, you do respect him.
Yes.
And, of course, he had tremendous enemies in the War Office, and they were all plotting against him, which didn't help matters at all.
Yeah, you saw this going on, did you?
Oh, I took the backlash.
Yeah.
Of course you would do, you see.
Was this because of his awkward personality, or was it a question of the ideas he was pushing through?
Well, he had a... he was a... aggressive, I suppose, is the right expression. He had rather an aggressive way of putting his point forward, which sort of upset people. But they couldn't cope with his mental antics. He was miles ahead of them.
Yeah.
And he was right the whole time.
Yeah. Was he in favour? You've mentioned about this expanding of the, having one training depot for mechanisation. Was it his aim at this time to build up a large tank corps, or was he going along with the idea of this mechanisation of the cavalry, and that the cavalry should have light tanks?
He regarded it inevitable.
Yes.
I think if he could, he would have probably disbanded more regiments and got new ones up, but he was a realist.
Yeah.
And I think he saw that the only way to do it was to turn Bovington into... He never said anything to me against it.
Yes.
He accepted it.
But one of the sources of irritation about him by, you know, other people thinking about him was presumably that he was such a tank corps enthusiast, was it?
I think...
That he was a threat to them.
Yes, he was. And of course he was an armoured division enthusiast too, which was something quite new. They couldn't see how that could work at all.
Yes. You mean the whole idea of having armoured divisions?
By itself, yes.
Yes.
You see, I don't know if we're overrunning the thing at all.
No.
But there's this heresy that grew up that Hobo wouldn't have any guns in the mobile division. Well, now, I was there at the time, and that was not so. What Hobo said, the guns can't keep up with me, we'll go without them.
You mean artillery guns?
Yes, artillery guns.
Yes.
Guns can't keep up, we'll go without them, because he was in favour of having a self-propelled mounting.
Yes.
Which, of course, they came to.
Yes.
But to say that because they can't keep up, I'll go without them, is a very different thing to saying they're no good to us.
Yes. In other words, you would have welcomed them had they been there.
If they had kept up, I know he would have welcomed them.
Yes. Yeah. What about design at this time? You were again at the War Office at this crucial period of developments in wireless and things. What was the general attitude if people came along and came forward with the design? Were there such occasions when developments took place and either they were stopped or...
Well, I think I'm not quite certain what you mean.
Well, I'm driving at the story you told me about Swinton, who brought an idea.
Oh, was he the Tauran lights?
Yes, yes. He brought that to you, didn't he?
There was a tremendous lot of that going on all over the place.
Yes.
But certainly the wireless development came on in 35, 36. It came on tremendously in those 2 years.
Yes.
I think we got in well in advance.
Swinton took an active part still, did he, in what was going on?
But he's the director of the company, too.
Of the Dessora?
Yes.
I see. Yeah.
There was the Tauran Lights Associated, and they're a French company.
Yes. And what happened on this basis? He brought the thing to you, did he?
Yes, the thing was then shelved. It was under top secret, but brought forward on mobilisation. Which meant to say that it was just put in a cupboard.
Yeah, this was this dazzle effect, wasn't it?
It did come out in the end, but...
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was wonderful, because perhaps I was too impressed with it.
Who did you actually show the idea to? Who did you have to go to?
It was shown to the Director of Military Training, who was Brooke.
Yeah.
And shown to the Chief General Staff, Devereux. They had a demonstration down on the Salisbury Plain.
Yeah. And you were responsible for organising that, weren't you?
No, the gunners did. I see. Gunner territory.
Yeah. But then this was rejected.
But Brooke was he was reactionary in many ways.
Mm.
And he was against it.
Yeah. To return to Swinton briefly, here was a man who'd been very much involved with the tank right from the beginning.
Yes.
How did you find him? You were ADC to him.
Well, to talk to him, do you mean?
Yes, and as a man.
Oh, he treated one as a friend.
Yes. Did he actually come down to the exercises?
Yes, he came down, yes, indeed he did.
Yes. And was he taking an active part in trying to get the development of tanks and armour and mechanisation? Did he take an active role in that?
Yes, of course he was out of the army, and he was a total Chichely professor at Oxford. He didn't sort of cut much ice. He didn't welcome another tank person in, because tanks they weren't exactly popular.
No.
Anything to do with tanks was considered a little unnecessary.
You stayed at that job then until what I suppose could be described as a hot seat, wasn't it, in that period, working for almost three people. Then you went, in August 1937, you went back to Quetta. You left this whole thing altogether.
Yes, Martel was the tank instructor at Quetta, and his tour finished. And they had no tank to have any description there. And he wrote to Army headquarters, and they wrote to the DMT and Hobo to say that they must have a tank instructor. Had he got anybody? Well, I was the only one. I got a year to go in the job, but I was the only one available. Crocker was the other one.
Yeah.
But he was teaching at the senior officer school at Sheerness.
Yeah.
And so they asked me if I'd like the job. Well, of course, it was a spot job. And again, it was well paid.
Yes.
So I said yes. And I went out there in October 37.
Yes. And you were with the responsibility for tank instruction?
Absolutely. Yes. That was one.
So...
Tremendous hostility I met.
Did you? Yes.
Oh, worse than the War Office.
I see. They just...
Well, they had the whole of India behind them. They weren't going to be making it.
Yeah. Presumably you were instructing people alongside... you were instructing with people who had been your instructors as well. Were there still men around who...
Yes, they'd gone.
Yeah. Because you mentioned that they were pretty anti-armour in the time you were a student there.
No, the instructors there weren't... They were fairly far-seeing.
Ah.
They weren't bad at all. It was a general attitude in the atmosphere in India, and of course amongst the students too, they weren't interested in tanks at all.
I see.
And no reason why they should be. They'd been stuck out there having tea on the lawn on Sundays for donkey's years.
Yes.
It didn't matter to them at all.
And you were very much one individual in amongst this lot.
Oh, was that a bloody fellow Burks?
Yes, I see. How did you go about? Did you sort of do any exercises at all, or use armoured cars in instruction, or...?
There was a light tank company up there. I used them quite a lot.
Yeah. And did you use a purple primer with them and things like this, did you?
Is it purple primer? Well, they'd heard of it. There was a copy in the library.
Yes.
But nobody really bothered with it.
Yes.
Well, but they hadn't even got a war establishment for a parachute battalion.
I see. Yeah, they were pretty out there. And it was from there, in fact, you were there for 2 years, in fact, in these sort of situations.
Yes, it was a three-year appointment, and I was there too.
Yeah, and how is it that you came to be involved in tanks in the war?
Well, it's all very, very theatrical.